Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. America Meditating Blog Talk Radio Show. We collect wisdom, hear stories, and inspire each other. I'm Sister Jenna. Tune in live from Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Take a break. Breathe. Why don't you visit the Peace Village Learning and Retreat Center, 518-589-5000.
Write thank you notes.
Tell the truth all the time.
These motivating thoughts from Randy Pausch's last lecture remind each of us to live our dreams.
Be creative every day.
Take a fun trip. Motivation. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Hello and welcome to America Meditating Radio Show. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. And we're broadcasting from the beautiful Meditation Museum in downtown Silver Spring. And hopefully we'll stay in downtown Silver Spring because I know that we're going to be going through a demolition derby next year in May or June. So keep an eye out for seeing where maybe the relocation will be at some point. And, you know, just in knowing that this beautiful space that we've created over the last many years, 5 years, 6 years, the vibrations, the work, the people that have come inside of these walls, they've left all changed. And so to me, I feel like there's a vibration here. And I came to learn a few years ago from someone that they actually never demolish a church or wherever there is a holy or a sacred site because they find it to be inauspicious. I don't know if you've ever heard that. And I had a wonderful conversation with the developers and hopefully they'll be able to come up with a plan where we can still continue to do the work that we have been doing in the beautiful downtown Silver Spring area. Every day, Monday through Friday, you can get a chance to tune in live on the America Meditating Radio Show to learn a lot about what's going on in the workings of the mind and how is your heart feeling. I've had rough days and I've had better days and I've had best days and I've had days like have no idea where that's going to take me. But I've been telling my community and friends of late that there are times that I just need them. You know, I need them. I need to reach out to them because I've been given the fortune of giving more than I can receive. And what that means is like when you give of yourself totally, unlimitedly, you have to be taking from a source that's even greater than where you're giving to, you know. So my connection to the divine, my connection to silence, my connection to truth, for me, that's the way. That's the way to get the energy rolling, to get the vibrations back into the spirit so that we can continue this game called life to our best ability. Today, we have a very special guest on the air who I was really touched by his TED Talk. Andrew Solomon is going to join me, and he's a writer and a lecturer on politics and psychology. And we're going to have a very meaningful discussion with Andrew about different areas of depression, but about life in general, and how he was able to step up to his own story and become what he is today, a soul who is making effort to be the best person that he can, along with his family. And his story will be very riveting for you to listen to today. One of the largest conversations in the world today is on depression. And we're in a country where there's so much available to us. and we're not always able to utilize all of that. Maybe it's just the stress of having more choices and not enough wisdom as to what's the best choice for me. And as much as we keep saying it's my choice, I ask everyone the question, is your life better as a result of your choices? Are you living your bliss? Are you 100% or at least 80% in your bliss? And these are questions that are very important for us to raise. We have a lot to learn, folks, and I think the greater our humility is, the greater will be our lessons to learn more about who we are, why we're here, and where does the soul actually go in terms of experience. If we're in a cycle, we don't go anywhere, but we gain experiences. Why don't we go to the Off to Work CD by Sister Jenna on letting go and take some time to ponder on this. You know, if I let go of all these limited ideas or attachments to myself, if I let go of all of those things, will I be happy? Why don't we find out? Breathe in, relax. Om Shanti. The time that we choose to be aware doesn't necessarily require me to just sit and meditate. But even while I walk and move around, I can be in a meditative awareness, which is awareness of the soul, the original, eternal, imperishable being of light. For a little while, I'd like to invite you to be present, to be here, and to be now. Allow your mind to settle in the moment, to relax. This meditation is about awareness. It's about becoming aware of your original and eternal self. About connecting to your truth. Let go of your name. And observe yourself feeling nameless. Let go of your gender. Discontinue thinking you're a man or a woman. Let it go and observe how you would feel walking around without a gender. Let go of the role that you play and let go of the titles that you own. Observe how you're feeling as you are gradually letting go. Let go of your religion and put it aside just for now. And let go of your nationality and even the language that you're accustomed to. Imagine you have no name, gender, role, title, religion, nationality, or even a language. Ask yourself, how do you feel at this moment? And in this feeling, who would think of you and who would you think of? The Supreme supreme soul would think of you. And you, the liberated soul, would think of the supreme. In this state of absolute freedom, I am truly who I am. A free, peaceful, pure, immortal, and eternal soul. Allow yourself to just be absorbed in this awareness. At this time,
I'm gonna need a sense of courage to see.
We have a lot to learn, and by being humble, the openness to learn emerges and becomes the highlight, really, of the way that we decode our lives and the way that we decode and relate in our relationships. Sometimes what is actually in our way could just be the way, as my very beautiful brother Mike George says in one of his latest releases in his book. Actually, the book is entitled What's in the Way is the Way by Mike George. And he really focuses a lot about the freedom of the ego and taking care of emotions and really trying to renew our energy. Because when it comes on to this energy of depression, it is such a drainage. And depression drains the soul's energy. And when the soul doesn't have energy, it has no drive or enthusiasm. It doesn't really care to feel better. And while overcoming our depression or our states of being low, it's not going to Auntie's home. It's not that easy. It is possible. There is a nice pickup quote that I came across, and it said, "When we long for life without difficulties, remember that oaks grow strong in contrary winds, and diamonds are made under pressure." So that means, like, when we are really going through what we might define as one of our most challenging moments in life or a very tough period, there's something giving way, there's something coming up, But is the core of depression a past birth experience? I was talking to Dadi Janku, who's 98 years old, and she's the head of the Brahma Kumari movement. And Dadi was saying that for many souls who have suppressed their anger, one of the karmic revelations of that is that the soul gets born in a birth where it experiences depression. It depends on however long the suppression of that anger or pain is. I can't tell you if that's really the true story behind our depression, but when I've had my moments where my energy feels drained and I don't feel hopeful about my tomorrow, nor am I driven to drive anyone beyond where I'm at, it's always a thought. It's like I'm trapped in a thought, and the thought gives me the same debilitating feedback of something I'm powerless over, or something I wish had changed, or something that I want and am not getting. And that thought keeps repeating itself in the consciousness of the soul. And the more intensity that I put behind that thought, like a confirmation of, I'm so upset about why this person, why, what, how, all of that needs to get out of our mental vocabulary. Why did they do that? Stop, fly. How could they have done that? This was how. And what just happened? It was fixed to happen. And it's just that one thought. It's that one thought that I think for many of us who have struggled with feeling low or feeling a little bit depressed, we fight with ourselves. So recovering from depression requires action. Sometimes charity to me is one of the biggest things that I can do, is to go and do a good deed, go and do service, make somebody smile. Give a donation to your great cause. Give a donation to the meditation museum. What I mean is, do something that you feel is beneficial for people. Because taking action when you're in a low state or depressed is one of the hardest steps that you can take. But when you actually push yourself to do it, it breaks the cycle of the thought. It's like a catch-22, the depression recovery process. The things that help the most are sometimes the things that are the most difficult to do. There's a difference between something that's difficult, though, and something that's impossible. Overcoming depression is not impossible. It is just difficult because that energy that we have been feeding for a long time has become a companion in the soul. And the soul now feels like that's my friend, that's my companion. And this is why when we do charity and give from the heart at a very deep level, we're able to overcome that particular situation, that particular thought, that's just that emotional feedback. I was sharing with Sister Gita at breakfast this morning about what is that attachment to that particular thought that connects to a particular feeling that sometimes our souls get so accustomed to. It's like we fall off of our own grid of ourselves, and we let ourselves go massively, massively. And I was in a situation in a relationship where somebody who was an authority for me, I trusted them, no doubt, and I trusted their wisdom and how they showed up. But intuitively, I also knew there was some karmas there between the both of us. And that soul was so intoxicated with the position of power that they held. And I got the end of that on many occasions. But I don't know what it was that was recorded in Sister Jenna's soul where she just would hear what they were saying. And at the same token, I would just intuitively know that there was some karmic issues here between me and this person. And at the end of the day, ultimately, I'm accountable for fixing my life and taking care of my life. And I would somehow try to find the wisdom in what was being told, and simultaneously knowing at the end of it all, ultimately, I've got to decide how to make my soul powerful and stand on its own 2 feet. And in the discussion this morning around breakfast, it was an aha moment for many people around the table, because there are times that we put our whole into a relationship and we say, yes, this person's responsible, so let them fix it. And then we leave them, and then we get bad and we get weak and we get awful. And then we're not responsible for our own feelings. And then 5-10 years later, we go, it's because my mother did that, or my father was like that, or my boss was such an awful boss, and because of them, I don't have a job today. That's not true. That's not true. They were giving signals. I am still accountable for what I choose to do and feel within my own being. And perhaps when we get down in ourselves and get into this whole depressed modality, it's because of all of those events that we have passed through where we weren't even present to learn what that lesson was. We weren't even present to learn what it was that the destiny was calling me to stand up to. And so when we find ourselves in certain situations, I know Antonia talks a lot about being stuck in a situation. For me, it's like having the same thought about a particular event. And I keep bringing that same thought into that event. And whatever I'm thinking and feeling, that is my reality. And this is why I think depression has become such a sensitive discussion, because you could look at the external factors of somebody's life or the external props of someone's life, and it's perfect, but internally it's not. So what is real? The external perfected life or the internal reality? And we will bump into things, folks. We will bump into situations that hit us at a core level of something that is unresolved in the spirit. And there are two ways of addressing it. Come out charging full speed ahead, or be the victim and let it eat you up and beat you up. So to overcome, you know, depression, please keep talking about what you're feeling. Now, don't keep talking about the feeling like I'm not good, I don't feel good, this is not working, he's like that, she's like that. No. Talk about what is it. Ask questions to yourselves. What is it this is trying to signal to me? Ask the self the question. What am I trying to figure out? What am I learning? What do I have to let go of? Call an old friend that you haven't connected with in a long time and go out and have a lunch or a coffee break with them. Come by the meditation museum and come and meet with the folks and have a nice chit-chat or conversation. Join us maybe a support group that might be in your area, in which just being in that community gives you a sense of identity and purpose. But you might have so much to bring into the community which can make it thrive and become even more than what it was when you walked in the room. Try your best. I know it's hard when you're down and out. Try your best to keep up with the situations in and around the house, because when that energy of depression comes in, it wants to pull you away from everything and everyone. It's a thought. It's a thought. And if you want to challenge any of those patterns of negative thinking, my friends, practice to think outside of yourself a little more, because depression lives inside deep deep inside, deep pressed. It's pressed in. That same thought is having a very deep impression in me. It's spinning over and over and over. Maybe a question like, ask yourself if you'd say what you're thinking about yourself to someone else. If not, stop being so hard on yourself. Think about less harsh statements that offer maybe more realistic descriptions. You know, think about it. Step outside of yourself a little bit. Challenge the pattern of negative thinking. And if you can, find some really positive, upbeat, nice people. I'm not talking about, you know, negative, upbeat people who are just laugh louders and want to do this and be all wild. I'm talking about just, you've got to have one or two really good people in your life somewhere, even if it's your dog. You've got to have something or someone around that's really sweet. Or go to a pet store and just go pet a puppy. You know, go to the shelter and go and pet a puppy, pick up a puppy, play with a puppy. See if it's something that you'd like to take home, even though you know you won't. We've got to push ourselves out of these moments because life is so precious. Even though the whole story of life is living in our heads, it's okay if sometimes we just step out of it and start to do something for ourselves in a physical way too. If you get a chance and you feel like it's important, you can write on your smartphone every negative thought that you keep having, and not to say to feed that, but just when it comes up and you're clear about it, just text it, write it down in your notepad, and when you look it over, just try to look it over as an observer or a witness, like that's not even you, and ask, why would that person think that? Why would you think that? Ask yourself, what is it serving inside of you? I hope that helped today. And I hope that you're able to overcome something or pick something up. Remember, failure doesn't come from falling down. It actually comes from getting yourself up. And sometimes, even if we mess up, it's how we clean up the mess that really shows what's going on inside of us. So it's a journey, and we are doing the best that we can. And I think by now, we might have our wonderful guest on the air, Andrew. Let me find out if Andrew's got on the line, because these were the things that I really wanted to just convey about this whole area of dealing with this depression. Hey, we've got Andrew on the line? Okay, that's great. All right. Wonderful. So then, the America Meditating Radio Show is really proud to welcome Andrew Solomon, who's a writer and lecturer on politics, culture, and psychology. His book, The Noonday Demon, An Atlas of Depression, won the 2001 National Book Award for Nonfiction, was a finalist for the 2002 Pulitzer Prize, and won 12 other national awards and was included in the London Times list of 100 best books of the decade. In 2002, Andrew received the Society of Biological Psychiatry Humanitarian Award for his contributions to the field of mental health. Really important issue of the current times. And in 2010, the Brain and Behavior Research Foundation's Productive Lives Award was also offered to Mr. Solomon. His latest book is entitled Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity, which is based on the proposition that being exceptional is at the core of the human condition and that the difference is what unites us. On the America Meditating Radio Show, we're very happy to welcome you, Andrew Solomon. Welcome.
What a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Andrew, I saw your TED Talk show, and I just wanted the whole world to see it.
Oh, thank you.
No, it was so revealing and so profoundly powerful, because it's even something that I've used in some of my lectures of recent, that find community and you'll find your identity, but bring something to that community too, so it grows and fosters into something more. We're in a culture and a society now where we tend to want to take more than we give. And I'd like to perhaps raise the question to you. From watching just your interview alone, it felt like something within the spirit of Andrew Solomon was trying to give more than he was willing to take from what others were giving him. Thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I'm always trying to give more than I take, but I don't know that I always succeed in that. I think the natural human impulse is always to take, and it's, of course, very very gratifying when I'm able to give things. I feel I get what used to be called secondary gains, the sense of usefulness. People often ask me if writing and speaking about my experience with depression has been cathartic, and they seem to be questioning whether it made me feel better to talk about it, and it didn't. It was very difficult to dig up all those difficult experiences and write and speak about them in public. But the sense that my doing so was helpful to other people and allowed me to take what felt as I was living it like a barren, useless stretch of my life and make of it something that could be of use to the world, that was very gratifying and in a way really redeemed those painful years.
Where did your courage come from to speak up? Because many of us lack that courage and we think about it a lot. We might, you know, say it to one or two people, but there's something that must have triggered inside of your spirit. Something called you inside of your soul and you did not care about what others were saying. You were caring about your healing and that you knew your story had meaning. Where did that courage come from?
Well, I am gay, and I've written and spoken about being gay, and when I was growing up, I was closeted, as so many gay people are, and I eventually came out of that closet, and when I came out of it, it was an enormous liberation for me, and I was determined after that I was never going to be in another closet again, that whatever I experienced and whatever happened to me, I was going to be straightforward and direct and share it with the world. And so when I had been through the depression, I thought, I'm not going to keep this a secret. And as soon as I began talking about it in my own circles, I began to realize how desperate the need was for more and better public statements about these situations and how sort of spiritually bereft many people were and how lonely many people were in these experiences. And I thought, okay, if talking about this will actually perhaps help other people who are dealing with it not to feel so alone, that seemed to me like a public service I couldn't say no to.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to say this with all due respect and with complete openness, because I'm not sure if all of our listeners would even decode or understand some of the depths of the process of our lives, how it unfolds. Would you say that your depression was because you were closeted in being gay, or just depression was because of just the unfolding of things that happened in life? Because I would definitely say it's not the first one.
Well, I would say that the depression grew out of the conjunction of a biological vulnerability and triggering circumstances, as I think depression generally does. And one of the triggering circumstances was certainly the stress of spending all of that time trying to keep one of the most fundamental things about me a big secret from the world. I wouldn't say I got depressed because I was gay. I wouldn't even say I got depressed because I lived in an unaccepting society, but I would say that those were among the many contributing factors that caused me to have feelings of anxiety and stress and unworthiness that were very toxic for me.
Powerful, powerful. Now, in your book, you write that depression is the flaw in love, and you describe major depression as a birth and death. Do you describe that or elaborate more on that for me?
Well, the flaw in love idea is just the notion that we really need our negative emotions, not only for the obvious immediate effects that they have in the moment in which we're experiencing them, but also in a kind of larger sense, because love requires the capacity for extreme despair. I mean, if I thought about the person I'm married to, if he dies on Wednesday, I'll just find somebody else. It wouldn't be love as we know it. If I thought about my children, they're very nice children, but you could always get others. It wouldn't be love as we know it. Part of love is that anticipation of loss and that sense of vulnerability to being quite destroyed by that loss, and the sense of sort of, gee, if anything happened to my children, it would be the most terrible catastrophe that I've ever known, and I would be in a state of absolute despair about it. So I feel as though we need to have that capacity, the capacity not necessarily for major clinical depression, but the capacity for enormous psychic pain is a component of our experience of love and connectedness to other people. All of our connection carries inside it the seeds of that potential for despair.
That's interesting, because coming from an Eastern perspective, I'm half Indian, half African, and I'm brought up in the U.S. So back in India, it is so normal to suppress those feelings. Of course, if somebody leaves the body, if the soul leaves, of course, it's a normal cultural thing to wail and weep and cry so everyone in the family knows that you are sad. If you actually don't cry at the funeral, they think that you hated that person, you know? But the thing is that you said something I thought was very powerful, was that it is important to embrace that sorrow and pain. But I think there might be that fine line where you've crossed over. Okay, that's enough welling into that pain, that it will go into depression. Would you say that's true?
Yes, I would. I mean, I think all of these things entail balance, and I think you can't universalize about exactly what the balance is because it's different for everyone. So, you know, there are some people who will rapidly escalate out of grief and into pain, and there are some people who can hold it off for longer. I'm often asked what the difference is between grief and depression, and I've sometimes said, especially if depression can be triggered by grief, and I've sometimes said, if you go through a catastrophic loss and you're terribly pained by it, and 6 months later you still feel sad but you feel a little bit better about it, it was probably grief, and you're probably in the process of emerging from it. And if you had a terrible experience and 6 months later you're even more disabled than you were in the first place, that's probably depression and it's probably escalating. So I think the trajectory is very telling. Now, of course, all of us get better and get worse and get better and get worse in either grief or depression. Neither of them is strictly linear. But there is an overall tendency, and depression is the tendency to go from the painful experience to a place where you're less and less able to function. And I often say that the opposite of depression is not happiness, but vitality. And so it's not a question of how unhappy you are. It's a question of how much your life force seems to have been drained from you and how much you find yourself unable to do the basic things that give coherence to your daily experience.
You know, that's a very interesting experience. Yeah, speaking from a spiritual perspective, any sort of a drainage of energy is a lack of self-respect. And when it gets to the point that it's draining out of you, that there just isn't any movement left for you to do, I don't feel like I can even move out of the bed. I had a beautiful interview with Byron Katie a while back, and I don't know if you've ever spoken to Byron, and Byron tells you for years she didn't get out of her bed. And then one day she did it. And she hasn't gone back in terms of that mode of depression. And now she basically travels around the world, and Byron's teaching is turn it around. Turn it around what you're thinking. Just turn around the way that you're looking at the story. What touched me right now with what you said before this was, I would say it all seems like we're in a cycle. And some of us are getting stuck in a particular cycle of an emotional feedback that is holding the soul. It's signaling to the soul something that the soul needs to release. And my question to you is, what question would you ask your own soul to release that emotional feedback that no longer needs to be your companion?
What question would I ask my own soul? I think I would ask my own soul how to take any dark or difficult experience and find the ways in which it's connected to positive and joyful ones. I'd ask my soul for coherence, I think, is the thing I would most want from my own soul. I'd say, how do the experiences that I'm having, in which I am so struggling, come together with the experiences that actually give life its purpose and meaning?
Beautiful, beautiful. And give us maybe one or two tips that you would like to recommend for any of our listeners that might be going through a real challenging period in their lives. One or just two tips. How do they get up and get running again?
Well, I think the first thing is that you have to have the genuine belief, not that you'll end up being thrilled that you had your dark experiences. Your dark experiences can be very dark, and you may end up not feeling glad at all that you've had them. But I think you need to have the sense that anything that's really painful can be constructed meaningfully, and that constructing it that way is a choice. I mean, you mentioned having listened to my TED Talk, and I always remember the words of that one mother who had two children with very severe disabilities, both of whom ended up dying in early adolescence. And she said, people always give us these little sayings, like God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. But children like ours are not preordained as a gift. They're a gift because that's what we have chosen. And I think that question of choice is sort of so central. But I would also say there is a point at which you are really in the throes of the darkness, and it does not feel like you could ever have that choice. And you just have to endure that piece of it and hope that you'll come to the other side. And the other thing I would say is that depression is a disease of loneliness, and that people who are depressed find human interaction burdensome and therefore tend to isolate themselves, and that most of us can find people who will be sympathetic to the pain we're going through. That pain, which feels so unique, is unknown to very few people, and it's incredibly important to have people around you who know what's happening. And if the issue you're facing is in part a biological one, as it often is, it's important to seek treatment. And if it's a spiritual one, it's important to seek spiritual advice. And if it's a psychodynamic one, it's important to seek therapy, and so on and so forth. But there are people in every arena through which that difficult experience can be defined who are there and who are able to provide help and support. And the fact that it feels like they won't do anything is one of the illusions that comes with depression or with great pain. And in fact, if you can allow yourself to access such people, those people can help you, and you should reach out to them.
Well, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. You've done so much work in that area, and you've lived through it. So you're speaking from not only a place of experience and the fact that you've overcome it, and I'm pretty sure you have little bouts ever so often, don't you?
Yes,
you just
do.
Have one of those mornings where like, why do I say
this? Well, I have
this?
Not only those mornings, I have, you know, moments when I suddenly think, oh, here it comes again. And the thing about having looked at it and written about it and thought about it and so on isn't that I can stave off those occurrences. It's that when they come, I, in the first place, know what the things are I can do to turn them around. I mean, practical things, you know, make sure I'm sleeping enough, get more exercise, regularize my diet, talk to my doctor, tell my husband and the people who I'm closest to, get all of the supports in place. I not only know all of that, but I've also now been through it enough times so that I know it feels like it will never pass, but that's symptomatic, and actually it will, and I've been through it and come through before, and I'll get through it and come through it again. And that's a very reassuring thing to know, but it's very hard to know that until you've had some time and experience of going through it.
Yeah, that's very well said. Andrew, it's been wonderful having you on the air, and we really appreciate you taking the time out to help us to get out of the state of definitely depression that's rampant to over 20 to 30 million Americans in this country. Is there anything that you would love our listeners to know that you're working on currently? And please share with us, what's Andrew Solomon's favorite life quote?
So, things that I'm working on currently, I have just started on a book which is about the idea that in an era in which women tend to work and men tend to be more involved in childcare, our notions of motherhood and fatherhood are slowly beginning to merge into a single idea of parenthood, and what the advantages are and what the liabilities are there, and how that's both occasioned and reflected by changed attitudes towards divorce and separation, toward gay families, toward open adoptions, toward increased foster care, and so on and so forth. So it's really trying to look at how we define family and how we can arrive at the most broad and encompassing possible version of it. And my favorite quote, there are so many quotes that I love, but I'll tell you the one that was the epigraph to my most recent book, which is from Wallace Stevens, and I want to get it completely right, so give me one second to muster it. But it's about the idea which was central to that book, that really we think what we want in life is perfection, and in fact what we want in life is anything but perfection. It's actually what we want is to have the richest possible experience that we can have of our lives. So give me just one second to muster this. The imperfect is our paradise. I think I'll just leave it at that. I did four lines in the intro, but the imperfect is our paradise, I think, is enough to carry the day.
Beautiful. And is there a website that our listeners can get a hold of you?
Yes, absolutely. It's andrewsolomon.com. It was down for a day, but it's now back up, and I would be happy to hear from any listeners. There's a contact form there.
Oh, that's beautiful. Andrew, thank you so much for being on the air, and keep up the good work, and lots of good wishes your way always.
Well, thank you. Keep up your beautiful and moving and profound program, and I hope we'll be in touch again.
Thank you. All the best. Bye-bye.
And you. Bye-bye.
So, you know, there's something powerful when you've lived through it and you've picked yourself up. I think it's time for us to really listen to those thoughts. Get out of the closet of your own mind, of negative or weak thinking. Perhaps the time that we step out of those negative and weak thinking is really that period or that era on which the soul will find its freedom and its power and its purity. You've been listening to America Meditating Radio Show. We have the wonderful Andrew Solomon on the air, so feel free to watch his TED Talk. Incredible. And definitely pick yourself up and get moving. You've been listening to America Meditating Radio Show. We appreciate you joining in all the time, and there's no doubt we've got a lot to learn. Remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And I think we're really all here learning to love each other the same. Take care, everyone. All the very best.